Session number 5868, Horton Monday, part 34.
I must have been there at Easter time, because I remember Easter Sunday. I told you they kept it up, same as Christmas. On this Sunday morning, the French Yuan and myself was in this place where he let us sleep and stay. Because on the Sunday morning, I remember, or middle of the morning, Oppy came round, he brought his wife, these two girls out of the village, and that widow, the officer's widow, they came in to us and come in singing and dancing and shouting. And they got a lot of so-called Palm Sunday, waving these about, and they kept it up just like Christmas and had a sing-song in their lingo, and the old boy, he brought some snaps in and we had a few drinks. We really enjoyed that, so I must have been there at Easter at that time. Well, now, I told you before, old Minna and me got quite pally. Well, I remember one particular night, the old boy, he was a gay old spark in his way, and I might tell you a bit about him later, on another tape perhaps, and he was a gay old spark, and he held a party in his house. Well, his house joined our place where we were sleeping, and had these gals there, and all of them had a good old sing-song. We could hear them singing and shouting, and we'd gone to bed then. Juan and myself, we laid down, we'd gone to kip, settled down for the night, and at the end of this long room, there's a window. Well, now, when you stood outside that window, your shoulders were thereabouts level with the sill of the window. Well, into the night, it come, must have been 11 o'clock or perhaps later. There was a hell of a rattle on the window, so me and old Juan jumped up, went to the window, and blimey, there was Minna. She was sausaged, must have been, and said, could she come in? So I said, yes, yeah. Hold you on, he said, no, we ain't having her in here. I said, oh yes, come on. I opened the window, Minna was outside, and oh blimey, she tried to climb in. I got hold of her arms and tried to pull her in, and the more I tried to pull her in, the more old Juan pushed me from behind to push us both out. Oh, how we did have a do for a time, and anyhow, it ended up pretty middling. I got old Minna three parts the way in, and old Juan give me a hell of a bang. Out Minna shot, and as she went out, she banged her arm through the window and smashed it. Oh, blimey, so we shut the window up and kept quiet. Well, in the morning, old Hoppy come in and wanted to know all about the window being smashed. But I think Minna must have told him, because he never grumbled us two at all, but I don't know what he said to Minna. I'll bet she copped a packet, but it was a proper laugh. At the end of the war, when we left Domino to go back to the main camp at Healdsburg, because the British was first to leave, I remember then, when we left that day, there was quite a lot of the civvies in the street to come and see us off. Poor old Minna, she was amongst them, and she come over and bawled, would I take her back to England? I said, no, I can't. But she were a nice girl. I sometimes think of her, you know, now I sit alone, older, wonder what happened to folks years and years ago. But poor old Minna, she were a nice girl. Now I better start and tell you a few tales of what happened, the experiences. And one especially was that old Hoppy, he used to have his leather come in bundles, the Oids, of course, come in bundles to the railway station. And he used to go to Konigsberg and select a load and have them sent through. That sometime happened. But anyway, on this particular occasion, I remember we went down to the house, and he says, come down the station and collect some of it, take a truck and that sort of thing. Well, we went down and we stood in the waiting room there. I remember this so well. We stood in the waiting room talking, and on the wall of the waiting room, the long, long wall, one very long wall, there was one placard, covered the whole lot of it, and all of it was a map of the world. Every country in the world on this map, and all the British colonies on this map was marked in red. That was Australia, New Zealand, Canada, all different, some parts of Africa, India, and all different parts of the world was marked in red on this large map along the wall. So this old Jerry said to me, you look at that, he said. That's what we're having to fight. Now look at Germany on here, he said, and he pointed Germany on the map. He said, look at that, a little small country like this fighting all those countries all over the world. I said, yeah. I said, but there's one thing you forget. Anyway, that's what old Kaiser said, you know. That is the reason why the old contemptibles have got that name. It was the Kaiser saying, that contemptible little army. Now that's how the contemptibles got that name. But never mind about that. Now we stood talking and about that sort of thing for some time. Now on the end of the other, end of this waiting room, on the end wall was another large map. And it was a map of England. Just the clear map of England and Scotland and Wales, of course. Just that on one big large map. Now every few little ways around that map on the wall were submarines, U-boats. And here and there I pointed them out to him. Of course he could see them same as me. I said, look, there you are, submarine, U-boats, all around England, blockade in England, so that nothing whatever could get into England because of the German U-boats. I said to him, I said, well, I said, have you noticed all the parcels we get? I said, all the food we get? I said, them boats, you know, got through them submarines easy enough, didn't they? Well, do you know the old fella? Well, of course he knew, I needn't have told him. He knew what was happening as well as I did.
Well, now, that's just a little part. Now then, back at work. Now, the old Jerry, that chap, we often used to sit and talk about different things, and now it was getting towards autumn, see? Towards the end of the summer, well then, towards the end of the war, actually, as it happened. It was getting autumn time, and things were not going at all well for the Germans. Now, he used to tell me quite a lot about it. In fact, he brought me the daily paper, the Berliner Zeitung. He brought that for me to read. Well, as I couldn't read it, because if you read English newspapers or any newspaper, how to pronounce a word is vastly different how it's written, so it was no good to me. I couldn't follow it. But anyway, he used to bring it and then he'd point out into it in different paragraphs, different things. Now, the way we went on together, we'd think we were two mates. He was nice, that's a nice bloke. And he told me then that things was going very, very bad for him. But in the village, people in the village, they didn't seem to know anything. They didn't discuss anything. I don't think they knew. Couldn't have done. But they didn't ever say anything. But he kept me worried up to everything that was happening. Well, now, after a time, it began to show. There was, first of all, you notice that when there was odd one or two soldiers came home on leave or came finished or deserted, put it which way you like, they used to have a little red button on the front of their round cap, round hat. Oh, Jerry's was a flat round hat. And on the front was a little red tab button thing. Well, now these that was in the village then, I just had one, and might have been two, I was spotted. They'd cut that off. Well, now it didn't take long to realise, well, he told me what it was. There was a revolution started in Germany then. Well, shortly afterwards, as history will tell you, because he just abdicated and went to Ireland and finished his life in Ireland. That was the end of him, but that had started then. But the villagers didn't seem to know anything whatever about it. And that carried on ever so quiet for some time. Now the Russians in the mill, in the sawmill, I had very little to do with, but I had no cause to. All I used to have to do was to go and change the saws in the machines that they was using, but I couldn't have a conversation with them because I didn't know their lingo and none of those there spoke German, so I was really at a loose end. I used to get on all right with them, wander around when one of the machines or the saws wanted sharpening. I'd come to that little room where I was sharpening them and asked me to change it. Well, I used to change them and sharpen it for them, but I had no mixing with them at all. Because the end of each day, you see, they was all marched all together back to their lager, which was the other end of the village, so I really had no freedom at all. Now this boss, he still used to come and talk to me, sit and have a chat, well, I think it used to amuse him. He used to like to hear a lot about, you know, the routine in Britain and so forth, and he used to tell me about Germany and that sort of thing. We had quite a lot of talk, and I remember one day he said to me, he said, you know, he said, you and I should never be fighting each other. He said, if you go back through history, he said, you yourself's a German. And of course, when you look back through history, it is almost so, because the Anglo-Saxons, we came from the Anglo-Saxons. Well, the time went on and it was now beginning to get towards the end of autumn into October time, and the weather was beginning to get a bit colder. But up in that room where I was, I'd got the old stove there, plenty of wood. I kept nice and warm and comfortable every night. And my old cooking pans and that, and my food, I was doing very nicely. But it had to come. And he told me one day, he said, well, he said, it won't be long now before it's all over. And in the village, they still say they knew nothing, didn't seem to know anything. And none of our chaps knew anything, and the Russians, they never knew anything. And then one day, a bit later, he come into that place where I was, he said, well, he said, you can say it's finished. He said, now you go up into the village, take a walk up, have a look in the post office, he said, and you'll see a telegram in the window. So I went off, I got quite a free laugh. I went off up in the village, round to the post office, and I always remember that telegram. written in German, of course, and I can remember it. Now it was, what is Der Krieg ist fertig um der Schützengraben. Now, translated, that means the war is finished in the shooting trenches, translated. Well, that didn't say the war was all completely finished. It just said that the war had finished in the trenches, in normal terms. Of course, as the boss told me then, he said, you need where it's all over. He said, they're all packing in. And it was so too. Well, now, as soon as I read that, I made a dive then back into the lager where our chaps was, and I told them, I said, it's finished. And these Russians in there, and French and Romanians, didn't know. I said, yes, I said, it's certainly finished. And, oh, how we had a good old shouting match and so forth. And that's how it ended up. Well, now, they never told us. The postman in charge never told us it was finished. Not for some time after that. Well, now, after a few days, we was all called back into the lagers. That was the one we was in, and the one that all the Russians was in the other end of the village. We was all called back and told definitely that the war was over. Well, now the old postman, he sent for me, called me in his office. He said, now, he said, I don't know how long it will be before you go. He said, but you British will certainly go first. And you'll go back to the main camp at Ealdsburg. But he said, if you like, care for it, he said, you British chaps can go down in the village and have a night out at the pub if you want to. I said, oh, bloody hell, don't want to, all right, that was good. So away we went, we all went down to this village pub. Oh, and we had a hell of a night. Because we got plenty of money, got loads of money, for the simple reason, as I told you on earlier tapes. Quarter pound tin of cocoa, 10 marks. Penny tablet of soap, 10 marks. So, I mean, we weren't short, what was a little bit fiddling, as I told you on earlier tapes. So we were no way short of money and drink, that was snaps and beer, was as cheap as dirt. So we had a good old do down there. Well, the village, later in the evening, the villagers come down, heard us having a sing-song and that, they come down and we were singing and dancing in the street. We had a hell of a night, enjoyed it beautiful. Well, the next day, I went back down to my old show down at the mill where I'd worked in that sawmill, and I told the boss, I said, well, we're all called back. I said, so I've come to collect me boxes where I've kept me food, parcels and all that in. So he took me indoors, took me in his house to him, his father, I forget now whether there was a woman there or not, I forget. But anyway, when we was in there, he said to me, he said, now look, he says, will you change your mind and come back with me to Brazil? I said, no, I said, I thought it over, I said, no, I want to go home. I was single, of course. I said, I want to go home. I said, I think I'd rather go home. He said, well, he said, if you won't come, he says, when I go back, he said, and I should go back to Brazil on the first boat that I can find. He said, and when I'm going down the channel back to Brazil, I should get on deck and I should wave me hand to England and think of you. Now, I thought that was blooming good, wasn't it, for a prisoner of war. Now, you've heard many and many of my tales about my life during those 20 months of prisoner of war. Now, I told you then that I went from a tramp to a king. Now you know what I mean by that, and I think I've proved it, because I was in a position then at the finish, as I've said before, the average German would have loved to have changed places with me. Well, now all being well, on the next tape that I make, I'm going to make another one, all being God willing, I'm going to tell you then what I've said before on earlier tapes, that I don't believe that there was ever such a thing as a hero or a coward during that war. Now, such a thing as heroes or cowards during that war. As you know, I was in it from the first week to the finish. That included trench warfare, battles of the Somme, battle of Arras, 20 months of prisoner of war, and collected 3 lots of wounds on the way. Well, now, we were not really soldiers at all. We were just civilians with a gun in our hand, all young chaps, mainly young chaps. Well, now, we came under the old-fashioned discipline of years before, very strict. Now, perhaps it'd be as well if I start off telling the tale about this. From early in March, early in April, we'll say, 1915. At that time, we was in the trenches at Plug Street Wood, just outside Plug Street Wood, which was a very, very dangerous part. In fact, we were so close, across no man's land, it was a matter of 100 yards from our front line to their front line. In fact, we often used to shout at each other. And if you happened to put your nose above the parapet, it was odds on you lost your hat. In fact, many poor brother chaps did. Well, now let me try and give you some idea as to how it was, trench warfare. Well, now you went into relief and in the front line. You may have been there anything from a week to 10 days. Well, whilst you were there, you had to spend 2 hours on guard, put it on guard, and 4 hours off, which meant that you had to be able to spend your 2 hours on the fire step, continuing keeping a watch across no man's land. Well, you had to be very smart. You wanted to have a look, you bobbed your head up quick and pulled it down. But they did supply us with periscopes. It was a narrow box affair, a long box, with a mirror at the top and a mirror at the bottom. But that was not a success, for a simple reason: when you put them up, if they happened to be just a shade above the parapet, it was odds on they had a bullet through, and you didn't see any more of that. It was pretty more than hitting you, really. Still, that was the routine. Now, here's a case of where medals have got. I'm just giving you a picture of it. Now, some big guy at the back would probably send an order up to find out who the German regiment was opposite to you. And that entailed a small raiding party, perhaps 6 of you, with a NCO, crawl across in the night and grab a prisoner and bring him back. Often you come back without a prisoner, sometimes losing a man or two on the way. Now, it is something that did often happen. You got a prisoner, you got him back, and when the rations came up, if you know what I mean, there'd be a medal amongst it. Well, now, we'll say that was Bill Brown. He had a medal for that. Now, when you sifted it down a little while, you suddenly realised that Bill Brown had got an uncle who was Sergeant Major. Well, there was your answer. They had to be given to someone. Well, now the other five there that went with him, they'd done just the same, but no mirror. Now, that's, I'm imagining that car, of course it happened hundreds of times, but I did not know personally the person, put it that way. Now I'm going to tell you a tale of one that I did know. That was a brother chap, and I won't give you his name, because if I do, well, his relations were still alive. But if he was alive himself, he'd laugh like hell. Now, this is how it all happened. It was one Sunday, and it was very quiet, while we were at Plug Street Wood. And he was in the machine gun section. That's the old-fashioned Maxim guns. You wouldn't know that today. Old Maxim guns, and this particular Sunday morning was in the trenches. He wasn't far from me. I was perhaps 100 yards, maybe, further along the trench, not far along the trench. And this morning he set to and cleaned his gun. Stripped it, cleaned it, oiled it, put it back. And he put a bolt of ammunition in and just pushed the muzzle through between the sandbags, made a bit of opening so it wouldn't be noticed, set his sights on a church just beyond the German lines, soldered it, set it on, and loosed off a bolt of ammunition. Well, now, some time after that, I forget how long, might have been a fortnight or so, might have been a bit more, suddenly he had a notification that he'd been awarded the DCM. Well, now that's the next order of the VC. And he'd been awarded that. Well, he didn't know what the hell for, and nor did we. But when it all boiled down, what had actually happened, behind the lines in those days, the artillery always used to send up a balloon with a cage underneath and an observation officer in it. Well, this particular Sunday morning, they sent this balloon up, something like the old barrage balloon business, sent that up, observation, he came down and made a report that this church behind the German lines, one of the gunners in the trenches had hit this church, and as the Germans was coming out of the church, they were scattered all over the place. Well, this chap had sighted it beautiful, and he didn't know he'd done it, but he got the DCM. Now, I won't tell his name, but if he's alive, he laughs like how we used to when we come out the army about it. Well, that's how he got it. Now then, I'll try and shift from that how easy it was to get a medal. Now, there was some very, very hard way of getting one. Tough, real tough, and killed and so forth, getting them. But that don't matter in my belief. Now then, I'll give you the other side. How easy it was to get stuck up on it again a wall in a firing squad. Now, I'll put it like this, that first of all, in the trenches, now you was on night, perhaps you was on in the night. Well, now, if it was a quiet night and warm, between 2 and 4 in the morning, it was always hell of a job to keep awake. Well, now, your mates, if it was a nice night, they'd be sitting along here and there along the front asleep, and you might suddenly feel, oh, hell, I'd love to sit down just for a minute. Well, if you sat down, once you ever sat down in a feeling like that, you'd had it. Because no sooner you sat down when you was tired on the fire step, away you went. Now, if you fell asleep, because you always put your arm through the sling of the rifle, always, when you were asleep normally, and at the front trench, and if officer came along, and he was a decent officer, one of your own officers, decent one, he'd give you a kick on the shins and say, come on, kill up on your feet. And that was the end of it. Now, if it was a nasty officer, which there was some, come along, sp- if you fast asleep and you'd be right away, he'd just slide the rifle off your shoulder, and this had happened times, but I never saw one. This had happened times, we knew it. So now he'd slide the rifle off your shoulder, take it away, and as soon as you woke up, you'd wonder whether your rifle had gone. And you had to go along and get it. The officer knew, he'd take it to the captain's dugout, make his report out, and the captain couldn't do anything about it. And that's a million to one. You'd have a court-martial, naturally. It's a million to one in those early days. It meant a firing squad.